This is Gulf Coast Life. I'm Julie Glenn. Thanks for joining us. As the ability to create online content has gotten easier, the ability to reach millions of people is something pretty much anyone can do if they've got a computer and an internet connection. This has made it increasingly important to be media literate. Media literacy is basically the ability to identify different kinds of media, see who's creating it, and what message it's trying to send, and then hopefully resisting the urge to share it, even if you determine that it's not from a reliable and fact-based source, even if you really want what it says to be true. Right now, with the COVID-19 pandemic impacting people all over the world, we thought it might be a good time to have a discussion about media literacy and get some tips on how to vet sources. We did a similar show last October during Media Literacy Week, and it's been getting a lot of attention since the coronavirus changed all of our courses. I'm joined on the phone by Lynn Milner. She's a journalism professor at Florida Gulf Coast University. Lynn, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Julie.
It's funny, you're on the phone, but just across the hall.
Yes.
We are social distancing. And I'm also joined by Chris Locker. She is a recent FGCU journalism graduate who was recently awarded the Gwen Ifill Student of the Year Award by the News Literacy Project. Chris, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Today we're live on the air and we're streaming live on the WGCU Public Media Facebook page. If you'd like to ask a question, weigh in there or on Twitter. We're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So for starters, Chris, tell me about the Gwen Ifill Student of the Year Award.
So I got a call from Alan Miller, the CEO, last week, and he told me that I had won, and then he sent me a bunch of background information. And I got to read and about the award and the history of it. And at first, I didn't really know about it. But then reading that it's for, you know, women of color and all of that and journalists, I was really grateful to accept it. And then I just had a Zoom meeting, my first Zoom meeting ever, with some of the producers. And they're going to send over some equipment to help me get started on doing an interview because, of course, the conference in D.C. got canceled, unfortunately, but it's all very exciting and very grateful to have been awarded.
So part of it was you were supposed to go to a conference in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, and that's where they would hand out the three awards.
Great. So the News Literacy Project, what is that exactly, since you've been reading up on it?
So the News Literacy Project is basically it's supposed to teach our world on how to be more news literate. So one of the tools that I got to use was Checkology, and I got to use it in Professor Miller's class. And it basically teaches students, teachers, how to accept different information that they're getting from the news and how to filter it and sort it, and then how to ultimately be able to share that and understand what they're sharing and how those people that they're sharing it with can also understand it. And
what is it called? Did you say Checkology?
Checkology, yeah.
Is that an app or a practice?
I should put in a blurb. It's actually an online interactive set of modules that students do. It's their required textbook for the news literacy course. And Dan Warner, who is a retired journalist, he used to work at the news press, funded the Checkology so that our students could have that for free.
Oh, okay. So Lynn Milner, hopping in on the conversation, thank you for clarifying that. Is that something that's available in only a scholastic setting, or is that something private people can find and get?
I think it's, you know, that's a really good question. I think anyone can purchase it. I don't think you have to be associated with a class, but I can find out, and we can post that later for listeners if they're interested.
So I'm curious, how does it work? You download it? Is it like an app or something on your computer, and it checks what you're looking at?
You use it online, so you could access it on a phone. You could access it on a laptop or a desktop. It's just a series of modules, so you might, in a given module, you might study, blurring of the lines between different kinds of information. And you might watch videos, you might do some exercises where you try to determine, is this advertising, is this news story, is this opinion, is this marketing, is this raw information, you know, and then you get little mini tips for how to tell.
So it's the difference. It's almost like Snopes training. kind of?
Well, it's broader than that. Snopes specializes in verification and debunking. What Checkology does and what we do at FGCU in our news literacy class is we back up first before we learn how to debunk anything, and we look at, okay, what is the universe of information that we are presented with from day to day? And how do we know what is PR, what is advertising, what is news, opinion, raw information, propaganda? And then once we have that framework and we know how to evaluate sources, et cetera, then we get into debunking and verification tools. So Snopes is kind of on that end, the debunking and verification.
So interesting. Now I have to go get it. Chris, I'm going to get back to you real quick and ask you, how news literate would you say you were when you started as an incoming freshman?
I would say probably not at all. I chose journalism as almost like a last-minute major, and I kind of fell in love with it. But definitely going into my freshman year, now 2 years ago, I took Milner's news literacy course, and I learned so much about news that I had honestly no idea. I thought news was just something we watch and trust it, and that was like our end-all, be-all. And now coming out of it, I know it's not as black and white as that, and it's such a gray area that I'm still navigating, and I'm still learning to understand and share and all that.
Oh, you and me both. Same boat right here. So, Lynn, we had you on the show back in the fall to discuss this topic, and the traffic to the web post for that show really spiked in the past month, which is why we brought you back. Do you have any speculation on why these times might be leading people to that show?
Yes. Disinformation is bad for our health. And so my guess is that people are trying to become more skeptical about what they're reading. We are faced with, we were already before COVID, you know, we've been in a fire hose of information. We stand in a fire hose of information all the time. But whenever there is any kind of breaking news, really, you get hit with more and more information and misinformation. And then with COVID, where people are, where it affects your health, people really need reliable information, so they want to equip themselves with tools for how to know what's reliable and actionable. It's more important than ever.
It is, but the problem is sometimes you'll see things and you want it to be true and then believe it more so than you would have otherwise if it didn't agree with you.
Yes. That's one of the major challenges that we discuss in our news literacy course at FGCU is overcoming our own bias, and that is so hard. When you see something that you want to be true, you have to back up. If you read something that makes you feel smug or self-righteous, right, back up and analyze it, because you might be kind of getting sucked into your own filter bubble.
Yeah. Do you feel, though, like right now, and what you're seeing on social media at this month as opposed to back in October, do you think it's more common right now for people to share news stories and memes that aren't true or fact-based than a year ago, or do you think it's less so?
You know, I haven't looked at the recent research on that, so I don't know whether it's as bad or worse. I would guess that it's not better.
Yeah, what's alarming right now is when people's health are what's at risk, there is some almost guttural anger out there on both sides, and they seem to have drifted very far apart from one another, that division.
Yeah, you know, Tom Jones at Pointer last week said something really interesting. Typically, when there is a tragedy, what we'll see is people coming together, kind of bonding over the news. Like if you think about Hurricane Harvey or Hurricane Irma or 9/11. But COVID is really showing us our divisions, which is kind of unusual and sad. It's making us more politically divisive, and I think part of it is the American public is ready to be more politically divisive. This is a moment in time when we're just primed for that. And then the other part of it is just the bias facet of it.
Well, the thing that motivates a lot is fear.
Yeah.
And there's the fear of getting sick, fear of loved ones getting sick and dying. There's also the fear of a loss of perceived freedom. And those two different kinds of fears have really pushed people, I think, in different directions.
Yeah.
So how are your peers handling what's been happening in terms of what they're saying and sharing online?
Is that for Chris?
No, that's for you, Lynn.
Oh, okay.
Well, both of you, actually. I'd like to kind of know because I have a confession to make.
Okay.
I shared something a couple days ago. It was an article.
Yeah.
And it was like 10 years old. I forgot to check the date.
That's the worst feeling.
I got called out on it. I felt so dumb. And I shared it from somebody else who I really respect, too. So I was like, ugh.
A lot of times when you get something from somebody you respect, you don't tend to check it because you respect that person. You know, we talk about that in news literacy. We have a fictional Uncle Leo. It's easy to, you know, to kind of vet. But then there's your friend at school who you think of as smart,
mm-hmm.
Who you wouldn't necessarily vet. People tend to remember who they got it from more than what it says.
Yeah, and I looked at what it says, and it pretty much affirmed what I thought, which was that PBS is a very trusted news source. So I was like, well, yeah, but it hasn't changed in 10 years. But it still was a 10-year-old article, and I was so mortified that somebody busted me on it. I hate when I do that.
Yeah.
Nobody's perfect, am I right?
Yeah.
So, Chris, how are your peers handling what's been happening? I mean, what are they sharing online?
So for a lot of my peers that are still in school, a lot of what we share is more so in group chats and less posting publicly on, like, Facebook or Instagram or anything like that. But recently one of my friends shared a series, like a compilation of videos of citizen journalists going to hospitals and taking videos of no one waiting in line, or so it seemed. And then it struck a conversation within my friend, the group chat, and everyone, you have half of all of us yelling and arguing about how Corona is, you know, destroying the world and all of this. And I'm sitting back and I'm on, you know, the CDC and World Health, and I'm looking at numbers and I'm seeing, like, okay, what more can I find on just this video that was sent? Because you can't just sit here and watch a couple videos and have that be the baseline of this argument. We need to find more information, figure out, you know, where the video came from, who took the video, where is the video located, and all of that. And I think just from my peers, they're not digging deeper into what they're seeing. They're just sitting back and reading and accepting, and
yeah,
that's really hard to see coming out of graduation and everything. So,
Chris, did you have to take statistics in college?
Did I take statistics? I did not.
I had to take it, and I barely got through it. So when everybody's throwing these numbers around, I'm thinking that when you throw those numbers at the masses, it's kind of hard for them to absorb that and understand it and digest it. So I'm thinking about that, and then I'm thinking about science. None of us are epidemiologists. None of us are biologists. None of us study viruses for a living. So people are kind of trying to wrap their head around something that's pretty complex and a multi-year discipline, so that they can make an argument about whether or not they can go to Costco without a mask on. So I think
Right. Part
of it is understanding the limitation of people's ability to understand something that complex. And I'm not calling people stupid. I mean, these are people that have studied this stuff for 8 years, 20 years, 35 years that we're getting information from. And one of the challenges, Chris, I'm sure you're going to notice as you get into journalism, is trying to digest these things, understand them enough to be able to pass them on without misleading anybody. That's the difficult
Right. Job
of a journalist. Right? So then you get
Right. People
that
Yeah. Are
not savvy journalists, that don't really take their job all that seriously, that just grab the headline, and you'll have an exaggerated headline of new drug can do this, but it's not 100%
Right. Proven. Right.
Chris, were you about to say something?
Oh, no, sorry. I was agreeing with you.
And then, Lynn, I wanted to ask you, without getting into the political foray, about the disparity between what the president's saying and what health experts are saying. When you have two different messages coming from the most powerful part of the land, how does that impact the way people share and digest information via social media?
Well, I think there's a real opportunity to be skeptical and to rely on the experts. One thing I think we tend to forget is that truth is provisional, which means we operate on the best version of truth we have at that moment, right? And COVID coverage has illustrated this perfectly. You know, there's so many things that we have found out just since December, right? It wasn't long ago that we thought masks did no good. And then in the past 3 weeks, I guess, everybody's wearing masks, you know. So there's always, the truth is always changing. And I think if we can be skeptical and listen to the experts and look at the studies, we'll be better off. And if we can look at who is telling us something. So this, it doesn't really have anything to do with politics or who's saying it. It's more to do with who is telling us, and do they have a reason to be an authority on this, or do they have a reason to be informed on this? And then all the hullabaloo about the president said this, the president said that, who cares, right? I mean, just let's look at the science, and let's not look at the politics so much behind this. So stay skeptical. Don't get caught up in the day-to-day finger-pointing. If you really want to inform yourself, you have to dig deeper than just, you know, looking at someone's comment and say, haranguing them about it. That does no one any good.
Yeah.
Well,
and then we had just last week, I think it was, a couple of doctors who put out a video with their, you know, their advice about dealing with this pandemic that was swatted down by large medical organizations representing a lot of doctors saying, don't pay attention to these people, don't give them airtime. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm sure that those doctors believed they were 100% right. So it's kind of tough, and everybody, and it's a new thing, and science is ever evolving.
Yeah, I mean, you have to stay open to new truths. You really do. I think we get in trouble when we don't. You know, to give a really old example, we once thought that Pluto was a planet.
I still think it is.
For decades.
I'm just kidding.
See, okay, so this is my point, right? So then it was demoted to a dwarf planet, at which point the experts said, you know what? You know what we realized is we don't actually have a definition of the word planet.
Yeah.
So, and then more recently, some authorities have said, well, you know, maybe Pluto should be a planet. So we have to stay open to changing truths. And when we don't, we get in trouble.
Yeah. Science is, I was told by Wynne Everham a while back, and I never will forget it, science is not black and white. It's always evolving. When something is, it's not always going to be that way. Things can change and new discoveries can be made. And this is a brand new virus. So everything that we get is brand new on it in the way of information.
Yeah. To me, it's fascinating to watch it change. And one of the best things that the media can do right now is to track those changes and to inform the public. And I tell my students in news literacy, you know, you're in one thing I hope you learn in college, really, if you take one thing away from this class, it is that evidence, truth changes as evidence comes available, and you want to stay open to new evidence, because if you get stuck, you stop learning.
We are discussing the need for well-informed media literacy during a global pandemic on today's show with Florida Gulf Coast University Journalism Professor Lynn Milner and recent FGCU Journalism grad Chris Locker on today's show. And we are also live. So if you'd like to ask a question, go to Facebook, find a post for this live stream of today's show at WGCU's public media Facebook page. You can ask a question there, leave a comment there, or you can weigh in on Twitter at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. We did get a comment from Facebook from Barbara Stewart. She says, I find that what is reported, even if factual, says as much as what is not reported with respect to bias. I really want facts and details on facts more than someone else's interpretation of the facts. Please remind people, so instead of a journalist's interpretation of facts, I think she's talking about what I said earlier, about how a journalist will get all the information and then make it into a readable thing to transmit the information to the public.
I'm also wondering if she's also talking about just what journalists choose to cover.
Yeah.
And we have always said, what you choose to cover has nothing to do with bias, but in my mind, it absolutely can. And I'm talking about news as opposed to commentary. I think a lot of people don't know the difference anymore and don't want to know the difference anymore, and it's because we no longer have Walter Cronkite, right, telling us, we know we can trust Uncle Walter to tell us the news, right?
Yeah, who do we trust now?
We go elsewhere for, I would say, no one person. I would say it's dangerous to trust any one news source. I don't do it.
No.
You need to go to different news sources and largely ignore the commentary that you don't trust. You know, there's news and there's commentary and editorials. And I think it's so easy to think, well, I'm watching the news, when you're actually just watching someone express their opinion
at an anchor desk.
Yeah.
It looks like a news desk and a news set.
The lines are really blurry, so you hear people say, well, so-and-so is really biased. And there's no one media organization that doesn't have a little bit of bias. But there is a media bias chart on the WGCU Facebook page that comes from, it's not WGCU created, it's created by...
I think the Knight Foundation, or...
It's the Ad Fontes Media Group.
Okay.
And they track media bias, and you can see where your news sources, where any news source kind of falls on the spectrum of left, right, center, complete junk, solid, all of that. And I try to stay in the green and yellow zones.
I know a lot of people that dine on only M&Ms, basically, is what I call it, when you're way out on the fringe there.
Yeah.
So I think we're just about out of time. Help me out, Mike. Yep, we are about out of time, so I'm going to let Chris and Lynn go. It's been great talking with both of you. Again, congratulations, Chris.
Thank you so much.
And Lynn, always a pleasure to talk with you, especially about media literacy.
Thanks, Julie.
If you missed part of today's show, you can always hear episodes in their entirety on our website, gulfcoastlive.org, or you can subscribe to our podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts. Our show today was produced by Mike Canary. Our director is Richard Chinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO, Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR 4, Southwest Florida.